We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
On Focus Today, we're talking about the Interfaith Youth Core with its founder and director, Eboo Patel, by phone. Eboo, can you hear me?
I'm with you, Steve. Thank you so much for having me.
Eboo Patel has a PhD from Oxford in sociology of religion, is a graduate of the University of Illinois. What did you study as an undergraduate, Eboo?
I was a sociology major from 93 to 96 at the University of Illinois. A great, great time to be down in Champaign-Urbana and a part of a university that changed my life. So I've much to thank the community down there for. And Steve, you, with your presence at the YMCA and other nonprofits, were central among those figures.
Well, that's very kind. I will need to introduce myself. I'm Steve Shoemaker, guest host today on Focus, and I'm happy to be talking with Eboo Patel, plus two current students at the University of Illinois. First, Greg Damhorst, who is getting a couple more degrees, MD and a PhD simultaneously. What are you focusing on, Greg, in your research for your PhD?
Yeah, so my PhD is in bioengineering. Here at Illinois, and I'll be working on a device for AIDS diagnosis in resource-limited settings. So a very global health focus on a big problem that our globe faces.
And we might tell listeners that you are a real student, which means you
That's
have
right.
to take an exam exactly at noon in the med school, and so you'll be leaving the studio here with about 20 minutes before the end of the program. But we were fortunate to have another student as well who's been involved in the Interfaith Youth Core, and that's Adithi Singh. Adithi, welcome.
Thank you.
And you were an intern at the Chicago office, the international headquarters, right?
Yes.
And what did you do for the Interfaith Youth Corps there this summer?
I was a communications intern, and so I worked closely with the vice president of communications, doing stuff with online platforms and newsletters and other office work also.
And you occasionally saw Eboo Patel, although I'm sure he was running in and out doing many things all over the country and world.
Yes, definitely.
Eboo, tell us about how the Interfaith Youth Corps began.
Well, it really began for me at the University of Illinois. I was a part of two great movements down there, the diversity movement and the service learning movement. And I loved the way that those two movements connected, how service was a place where people from diverse race and ethnic and gender and class backgrounds would come together and, you know, work on a common project, and how they would enrich that common project by their different perspectives. One of the things my dad pointed out when I was a student at the University of Illinois was that one of the greatest motivators of service was religion, and one of the greatest fault lines in our world was between people from different religions. And it occurred to me that although I had a great time in the diversity service learning movement, there wasn't that much talk of religion or religious diversity. So my big idea was, well, why don't we create projects which bring people from different faith backgrounds together to do service? Service is inspired by every religion, and it's a great place of common ground for people from different religions to come together. So that was really the beginnings of the Interfaith Youth Corps. The idea, the early stages of the idea were when I was a student, and it kind of grew when I came to Chicago and I was a teacher and I started attending interfaith conferences, and I recognized that as wonderful as the interfaith movement was, there weren't that many young people involved, and there wasn't enough direct social action. So as a Rhodes Scholar at Oxford, over the course of the next several years, I put together interfaith service projects all over the world. I saw them change the lives of the young people involved. I saw young people of the excellence and commitment that you have in the studio there today, people like Greg and Aditi, and I decided I wanted to make this a big part of my life's work, trying to advance a movement of young people building bridges of cooperation between different faiths instead of forfeiting the world to those who would build barriers of division or bombs of destruction.
Now, you were raised in Glen Ellen in a Muslim family, but not of I'm tempted to say from reading your recent book, Acts of Faith, it was a Muslim family, but not real active as practicing Muslims. Is that accurate, or
we were practicing Muslims, but in the sense of saying Bismillah before prayers and keeping the food and dietary restrictions, etc. But I would say that religion was not a huge part of our lives, if you will. Religion became more a part of my life when I was a student at the University of Illinois, and it was really through service and social justice work. I did a lot of work with homeless people down at the University of Illinois, with the men's emergency shelter, with the Salvation Army shelter when that was open, with the Center for Women in Transition, and I was seeking a cosmic base for my work, a well of inspiration that I could return to over and over again, which would sustain my work. And my first faith hero when I was a student was actually Dorothy Day. And I spent a good amount of time at the St. Jude's Catholic Worker House in Champaign. I hope it's still open. It really changed my life, and I know it changes the lives of a lot of people who go through there. And that was the beginning of my faith journey back to Islam. And what I discovered in my time in the Catholic Worker Movement, in my study of Judaism and Buddhism and Hinduism and Christianity, was that service was a core part of all of these religions, and it made me ask that question of my own ancestral faith, Islam. How is service a core part of Islam? And I discovered that indeed it was. In fact, a little known fact about Islam is that before it was known as the religion was known as Islam, people in the Prophet's time would call it tzedakah, which means compassionate justice. And the core value of Islam is mercy. And it's very similar to the core value of compassion in Buddhism or love in Christianity or repairing the world in Judaism. And I just think in a world in which we see so much religious conflict, the kind of conflict that highlights the differences between faiths and says that one faith ought to dominate another because of those differences, I'm just really proud of having the chance to know people like Greg and Aditi who are lifting up the common ground of mercy and compassion and service and saying different religious communities ought to cooperate on this common ground.
Let me give the phone number so listeners can join this conversation. If you're listening in Champaign-Urbana area, punch in 333-9455. If it's a long-distance call, 1-800-222-9455. And if you'd like to send us an email, you may do that at will-talk@illinois.edu. That's will, what we used to call a hyphen, will-talk@illinois.edu. Greg, how did you first hear about the Interfaith Youth Corps?
Well, it all started about 4 years ago when I was a freshman on this campus. And actually, the story predates that even. I had a friend in high school who was 2 years older than I was. And he would participate regularly in the Bible studies that we would do at our high school and some other programs, after-school type activities where we had spiritual conversations. He came from an interfaith family. One of his parents was Jain, another was Hindu. And he just really took to these conversations that we were having. So he came down here. His name was Hamong. And he somehow discovered the interfaith group on this campus called Interfaith in Action. So when I got down here 2 years later, he sent me an email and said, "Hey, I think you would be really interested in the conversations that we're having here."
What was your religious background?
I was raised an evangelical Christian, still am, in the Evangelical Covenant Church, which is a small denomination. So anyway, he invited me to an event at Allen Hall here on campus where Ibu was a guest in residence, I think, for a week. That was the first time I met Ibu and the first time I was introduced to the idea of interfaith dialogue ever since, I suppose, I've been hooked.
And what was the first project you got involved in? What service project?
At the end of that spring semester, we were organizing a day of interfaith youth service. This is an event that where we would bring together students from all over campus and actually go to several different sites. I ended up painting walls at a nursing care facility somewhere in town here, can't even remember where it is, honestly. But that was my first experience, my first project in leading an interfaith event.
And what was your last? I know I happen to know because I interviewed you on Keeping the Faith about your last service project.
That's right.
And it was rather phenomenal.
Our last service project was also what we would call a Day of Interfaith Youth Service. It started out as something small. We had these ambitions of packaging meals to send to Haiti through an organization called New Manna. This is something that's been done all over the country now in the past several months. That picked up a lot of momentum, got a lot of support, and we ended up packaging 1 million meals last, I believe it was April.
Over 1 million, I think.
Over 1 million, yeah. I can't remember the official number. But what I'm even more impressed by is actually what the local newspaper reported as the number of volunteers involved, which was over 5,000.
Wow. And you were the leader of that. You shouldn't be modest. You really had the idea and pulled in all sorts of organizations to help, Salvation Army, other religious groups on campus, and, of course, the Interfaith Youth Corps.
Exactly, yeah. And you're right, it did start with me, but there were a lot of individuals who played a vital role in making that happen.
And Adithi Singh, you're a junior, an undergraduate at the university. How did you hear about this kind of service projects?
Well, I'm part of the Campus Honors Program, and when Ibu came down as part of his One Book, One Campus speaking tour, he spoke at the Honors House, and that's when I heard of Interfaith Youth Corps, and from that I got in touch with Greg. And so my first real experience at U of I was at his 1 million Meals for Haiti.
Wow.
So that was a great first start into service work and what it means to be part of the Interfaith movement.
Where had you been a student before?
I've been at U of I since 2008. Where were you
in high school?
Whitney Young in Chicago.
Chicago.
And service work has been a vital part of my life ever since I was little, as faith has really brought me to do work like this. But it was nice to finally have a name to call what that means to go into the field and actually work in the community.
What's your religious background?
I'm a Christian.
Uh-huh. What the denomination?
It's very complicated.
It often is.
Yeah. Since we've moved around a lot, we tend to go to different churches. So I've been to an evangelical church, a Baptist church, a Lutheran church, which is what I'm attending now. And technically, I'm Church of South India. Uh-huh. But there are not too many of those here.
Dr. Patel, when you first started these service projects with Interfaith Youth Corps, you included right from the start, according to your book, Acts of Faith, conversations, dialogue. It wasn't just let's work together, but it's also let's communicate about what's motivating us to do these projects from our own faith traditions.
That's right. And I want to say what the Interfaith Youth Corps, the core of the vision is the existence of people like Greg and Aditi, that we believe that there were literally millions of young people of their level of excellence and commitment across the world, and the whole organization is built on them not just being participants, but them being leaders. So I look at what Greg organized with the 1 million meals for Haiti, with 5,000 volunteers in the Champaign-Urbana area. And I say, you know what, Greg? You might not have believed you could do it, but I knew you could do it. And next time it's going to be 10,000 volunteers and 2 million meals, right? Because it's been young people who have been our faith heroes throughout generations. I think about Martin Luther King Jr. being 26 years old in Montgomery, Alabama. I think about Gandhi being even younger when he led the movement against the racist pass laws in South Africa. And what we're really looking at the Interfaith Youth Corps is a new generation of people inspired by their religious and or ethical traditions to build bridges between people from different backgrounds. Bridges, as President Obama says, of service. And you know, one of the things that I believe Aditi found in her experience with us this summer is the leadership that we expect young people to take. They're not just participants. They're people. The existence of the Interfaith Youth Corps is about empowering, networking, mobilizing leaders like Greg and Aditi who are doing their own work in the world.
We are talking today on Focus with Eboo Patel, who is the founder and director of the Interfaith Youth Corps. His autobiography is called Acts of Faith, The Story of an American Muslim, The Struggle for the Soul of a Generation. It's been re-released recently. It's now available in paperback. I can highly recommend it. It's quite readable. Fascinating reading of his own personal story and the people who were involved in influencing him and where he got various ideas around the world for this wonderful organization, which is only, what, 11 years old? Is that right, Eboo?
The idea kind of emerged in the mid-1990s, and we've been kind of a real organization with a staff and an office and a budget since 2002. So we're 8 years old.
Uh-huh. And where does the money come from?
The money comes from individuals who are inspired by people like Greg and Aditi, who say, I want to support that kind of work. And if any one of those individuals might be listening right now, you can go to ifyc.org and be part of this movement by clicking on that donate sign. It's supported by foundations everywhere from the Rockefeller Brothers Foundation to the Carnegie Corporation. Several faith-based foundations are big supporters. And we also have fee-for-service programs. So our speaking and training are things that universities pay for.
When Greg, you first got involved with Interfaith Youth Corps, what excited you most about it?
I think it was the fact that there was this conversation going on with people that I had never really interacted with before about something that I was already passionate about. So something that I've discovered during my time here at Illinois, something about my own faith is that service is so central to who I am as a Christian that I want that to be what my life is about. So when I found a community of people who were talking about this and people who were inspired by it for other reasons, and then using it as a platform for talking about the different views we have on the world and why we serve people, that made me excited. That gave me an opportunity to build relationships that I had never really had an opportunity to build before.
But as an evangelical Christian, one of the things that you believe is that you should evangelize. How could you be working with people who are Muslims or Hindus or whatever, Jews, without to saying, you know, really you're wrong and I'm right. Listen to me tell you about that.
Yeah, so there are a couple of thoughts I have on that. And one of them is because of this emphasis on evangelism that my faith teaches me. I value the opportunity to form relationships with people who are different. And what my faith teaches me is that that relationship shouldn't be with an agenda of trying to convert someone to my faith, but should be with an attitude of love. And so these conversations that we have about service and the relationships that we build through them are exactly the sort of thing that my faith teaches me to do.
Eboo, has that been a problem when you get people of different faith traditions together, that a fundamentalist Muslim may find it difficult to keep from witnessing?
You know, the funny thing is, it's more a problem for people who don't know that many or that much about evangelical Christians, or I would even say the evangelical dimension of the Muslim community. The vast majority of the evangelical Christians that I know, and I know thousands, are like Greg, which is to say that they are people of high excellence, high commitment, high faith, who seek positive relations with people and who seek to serve others, not in order to convert, but because they are converted. So I am inspired by Greg's faith and how it motivates him to build relationships and serve others. That doesn't mean that Greg and I agree on everything, but it means that on the areas in which we might have theological differences, we can have a calm, reasoned, loving conversation, and we can say, now we're going to put that conversation away, and we're going to go make some meals for people suffering in Haiti, because both of our faiths command us to do that. So Greg, I would say in this area is much more the rule than the exception, at least as far as the evangelical Christians that I've come across.
You have a very fascinating section of your book, Acts of Faith, where you talk about some evangelical Christians who might have more in common with Osama bin Laden than they do with people who are more pluralistic. Would you want to say something about that?
Well, this is in the front part of my book, and I make it clear that I'm not talking about evangelical Christians here. I'm not talking about evangelical anybody. I'm talking about a very small group of people who I call totalitarians or extremists, and I think the 21st century is going to be defined by what I call the faith line. And the faith line, of course, is a takeoff on W.E.B. Du Bois' great insight that the 20th century would be defined by the color line. This isn't to say that the color line is behind us. We clearly have much progress to make on the issue of race and race relations in America, but I think we've inherited this new line called the faith line. And the big point that I want to make about the faith line is that it doesn't separate Christians and Muslims, and it doesn't separate believers and non-believers. The faith line separates who I would call the pluralists versus the extremists. And by pluralist, I mean somebody who believes that people from different backgrounds have to get together positively on earth. So Greg, as an evangelical Christian, might well have a view of heaven that that takes from the biblical line that no one comes through the Father except through Jesus Christ. But his Christian belief also calls him to view earth as a place of common service and cooperation. That's being a believer in pluralism. I think that anybody who wants their own group to dominate and everyone else to suffocate is what I would call an extremist or a totalitarian, and there are many tools of extremists. The worst tool by far is the tool of violence, the tool of Al-Qaeda. Right? But there are rhetorical tools that are used by extremists as well, and those are dangerous indeed.
And you have several examples throughout your book which talk about Christian extremists, which talk about extremists from many different religious traditions, and many of them end in violence. But you also give some wonderful examples of the kind of communication that can happen over those religious lines and result in cooperation. Tell us about some of the core values of the Interfaith Youth Core. And I might let listeners know that CORE in this case is spelled C-O-R-E to refer to those core values.
So the long-term vision of the Interfaith Youth Core is to help make interfaith cooperation a social norm in the way that environmentalism has become a social norm, or the way that human rights has become a social norm, or the way that volunteerism and civic engagement has become a social norm. And we believe that college campuses and college students and young people more generally have to play a key role in that. Some of this is based on my own experience in the multicultural and service learning movements as a college student, and recognizing how formative those experiences were for me and how I've carried on that ethic as a young adult beyond college, and also recognizing the powerful role that higher education as a sector played in advancing the national multicultural movement, the national service learning movement. And I think that colleges, if they model interfaith cooperation in the same way that they have modeled civic engagement, they can play a national leadership role in advancing interfaith cooperation as a social norm. And, of course, I think front and center in that is college students, is people like Aditi and Greg doing precisely what they've always been doing, which is to say articulating how their own faiths inspire them to serve others and to cooperate with people from different religions, constantly highlighting common ground between different faiths. You know, in a world in which people want to talk about theological and political differences, Aditi and Greg are talking about the commonalities of mercy and service and compassion across faiths, and then doing precisely what Greg and Aditi did, which is to lead really impressive interfaith service projects which provide concrete service, 1 million meals for Haiti, and also bring people from different backgrounds together and show them that their own traditions inspire them to do good, and hey, wow, look at all these people here from other traditions who are here inspired by their traditions to do good. They're building the kind of world that we all want to live in, and I just want to say hats off to them. May God bless them, and may we all keep them in our prayers.
Let me remind listeners, you can join this conversation easily in your telephone. Punch in 333-9455 if you're in the Champaign-Urbana listening area. If you're outside of the 217 area code, you may use the toll-free line, 1-800-222-9455. We're always eager to have listeners share their ideas and questions and concerns. If you'd like to send an email, you may also do that at will-talk@illinois.edu. I'm Steve Shoemaker, and our guests today are by phone Eboo Patel, who's the founder and director of the Interfaith Youth Corps, and two guests in our studio, Greg Nabhorst, a Ph.D., M.D., student here at the university who's going to have to leave us in just about 8 minutes, I think, to take an exam. What did you say that was in, Greg?
That's a medical genetics exam.
Genetics, all right.
Yes.
And also Aditi Singh, who is a junior here studying, you're majoring in world literature and you're minoring in global studies. Does your activities in service projects help you in those kind of academic studies?
Definitely. I want to go into community organizing or immigration and after law school. And so a lot of the service projects that I do tend to be in that area.
So you hope to be president someday?
Hopefully.
I hope she's president someday.
Were you born in this country?
No, so that would take a lot of work.
And I'm sorry, I was being silly, but... So what are some of the advantages to your academic work from this kind of service?
I remember one line in Acts of Faith. Eboo said that you sit in the classroom and you hear about why these issues are happening, when they happened, and what started all of it. But when he actually had to, I think he was doing Teach for America, and he was in the classroom, and he knew why this was happening, but he couldn't actually... I mean, it took a while to actually learn how to interact in that setting and actually do good in that setting. And so that really spoke to me, because you can learn about everything but not actually know how to fix it. And so getting that exposure now, at least building relationships with people and seeing how it is to be in that setting, gives me like a more well-rounded view on the problem, not just the academic side of it.
And what about you, Greg? Here you are in one of the most intense, difficult programs, a Med Scholar program where you're getting an MD degree as well as a PhD. It may take you 8, 10, who knows how many years.
Yes.
And yet you're also finding time to do this. Why do you do it?
I can't stop, honestly, is the answer. In fact, I was at a small gathering with friends on Saturday and started talking to someone I had just met there, and was asking her about her faith background. Found out that she had grown up in a Christian school, gone to a Christian high school, gone to a Christian college, and now as a grad student, this is her first experience being
in a secular place.
In an environment where she's not surrounded by Christians every day.
Sure.
And so I said to her, I said, I'm really interested in what your experience is. Because this must be very new for you, and how do you adapt to that? And so she was explaining to me the frustrations and the challenges of knowing how to talk about her faith in an everyday setting with people who don't share her faith. And that got me to talking about my experiences doing interfaith dialogue, my relationships with people of other faiths, and the way that I've learned to talk about my faith with people from any background. And it's something that just gets me passionate. I get excited about it, and I can't just stop doing it. I have to be very careful about how much time I invest in doing things on this campus. But thankfully, there are many young leaders on this campus who are committed as well to doing interfaith dialogue, to doing service, and those are the people that I'm connecting with and making sure I can help them in whatever ways I can with the time that I do have.
Well, we do wish you well with that and with the exam. I know you're going to have to leave for now, and from each of our different religious traditions, we'll say a little prayer that you'll do well in the exams.
Thank you.
And, you know, as Greg leaves, I just want to first of all say good luck, my friend, and I hope you do great. And
so
just imagine Greg running a hospital one day, and just imagine the positive, beautiful things that happen in hospitals. You know, Muslim and Jewish doctors operating and saving the lives of Christian patients, Buddhist and Hindu nurses taking care of humanist agnostic patients. And just think about how that could be a model for our whole society when it comes to interfaith cooperation. And think about a leader like Greg who sees that as part of the healing and service of the institution he's running and lifting that story to the surface. You know, part of what we're doing is we are inspiring and empowering and networking a critical mass of people like Greg. And think about Aditi, and think about her running a communications firm one day, and think about her having the skills to tell the stories of interfaith cooperation in a world that only hears stories of religious conflict and violence. You know, so I think about how impressive the work of these two young people is right now, and then I think about the next 40, 50 years of their lives and the good that they're going to be doing, and I get really hopeful about our future.
Thank you very much, and we'll say goodbye to Greg, but we'll say hello to a caller on line number one from Champaign. Yes, you're on the air. Go right ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I had the privilege of hearing Eboo Patel at a recent conference in Chicago called the Christian Community Development Association, and he was there as a guest and right after a panel of several other dynamic Christian young leaders, because I'm older than Eboo. And then I came home, and I happened to hear a speaker from what I think would be more of a Christian fundamentalist position talking about the mosque building in New York City as an example of all the problems in our society today. And I was interested in hearing how Mr. Patel would suggest to engaging a dialogue with people who are people of faith, yet are also, I think, in these times, people of fear. And I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Wow.
Thank you for the call, Eboo.
I think it's a powerful articulation. The fear that a lot of people have. So I think that the most important thing we can do right now is exactly what Aditi and Greg are doing, which is to engage people in a conversation about commonalities. So people who are afraid of Muslims or Islam often don't know what they have in common with Muslims. And so one of the things that I will talk about is the most repeated Muslim prayer is Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of God, the all-merciful, the ever-merciful. And Muslims believe that God's key characteristic is mercy, and that is the key characteristic God wants Muslims to embody on earth. Just that piece of information, and then asking the question, you know, how does Christianity, or how does humanism, or how does Judaism, or whatever your faith is, how does it speak to mercy? So what we're doing there is we're reframing the conversation away from the negative things and even away from the differences. We're holding up a shared value like mercy. We're pointing to how a religion that people might not know that much about, or people might only have bad information about, believes in that value, and we're inviting other people into the conversation in a positive way.
Aditi, we have another caller waiting that I want to get to very quickly, but do you have a response to this caller who asks about what about the fears that some Christians have about Muslims?
And to that I say, sometimes you have to talk to other people, and most of the time a lot of these Christians haven't had a relationship with a Muslim or even seen one or spoken to one. And knowing the person behind this fear that they have of the person is what would conquer that fear. So that's why a lot of interfaith projects, there, I remember there was one about iftar in the synagogue, and they brought Jewish and Muslim people together over a meal, something so simple that everyone shares and enjoys. And those are the kinds of things that bring people together instead of pulling them apart.
We have another caller waiting on line number two from Champaign. Yes, you're on the air.
I'm hearing a lot about people and sociology, and I wonder where nature, nurture, and the environment fits into this, and I'm often not hearing that. And it's a different aspect, but a lot of naturalists are also have a faith of their own and an interface of their own, but it doesn't always get together with the sociological side of faith. Can you say something about that?
We'll ask Dr. Patel, who, after all, studied sociology of religion, to give a response.
Right. Well, thank you so much for that question and that insight. I think stewardship is a really powerful shared value between faiths and between people who don't have a traditional religion and people who do have what might be called a traditional religion. For example, in my own faith of Islam, we believe that God put human beings on earth to be his abd and khalifa, his servant and representative, to steward the planet. And I think it's a really powerful place of common dialogue between people from different backgrounds who all care about stewardship, and more importantly, a place of common action. Because once we talk about our different concepts of stewardship, we can get busy on actually stewarding together. So, you know, I hope that's the kind of project that, you know, Greg, Aditi, and the caller can get together and lead in Champaign-Urbana. It's a conversation on religious diversity and stewardship, and then common action on stewardship.
Did you want to follow up, caller?
No, I have some very specific difficulties here, which is a disjunct between old churches and nature. There are very strong concepts in the church. I this week took a field trip to Flat Bills, the flat part of the glaciated landscape, and then up the glaciated moraine. And one of the most disappointing things for me is someone from Australia who came here and couldn't find the ecosystem because it's been farmed out, was to see huge tractors mowing some of the only natural ecosystem that is left. And it's a massive problem right locally. And it's also a religious problem because of the rural sociology of straight rows and mown territory. And so there's a disjunct between the cathedral on the prairie at Flatville and the moraine that's just alongside and gives them the flatland.
Well, let us thank you for that raising that point. Let's let our student here respond a little bit from your religious tradition. Is concern for the environment, for the natural world, important in your Christian faith?
Definitely. I know that at least for me as a Christian, you want to leave the world a better place for future generations. And just keeping that in mind, I have been part of service projects in my church where we'd clean up the neighborhood, plant trees, and it's sad. It is sad that it is not a common thing, but there are churches, there are religious backgrounds that really want to protect the environment and see it as part of their faith to do so.
And Ibu Patel on the phone, have there been many service projects over the life of the Interfaith Youth Corps that have focused on preserving the environment, on sustaining the earth?
I would say that amongst the most common service projects that our college students lead are these interfaith environmental stewardship projects. And while I hear the frustration and the voice of the caller, I would say that our best response is action and encouragement to a generation of young people from all faiths who see service as central to their stewardship as central to their faith and want to cooperate together on improving that. So, And I'm always looking for how we advance the positive arc of the universe, and I think this is one of the places where it has the chance to accelerate fastest.
Listeners who'd like to learn more about the Interfaith Youth Corps can, of course, go to their website, ifyc.org, and there's also a place that people can donate if they wish to make a contribution to help this organization continue and expand. They can also read Eboo Patel's book, Acts of Faith, The Story of an American Muslim and the Struggle for the Soul of a Generation. It's just come out in paperback, has been re-released with a new foreword. I can highly recommend it. It's also recommended by such people as Jim Wallace from Sojourners, from former President Bill Clinton, Diana Eck, the author of Encountering God from Harvard. A fascinating tale of his own experience growing up from Glen Ellyn at the University of Illinois, a Rhodes Scholar at Oxford University, a PhD in Sociology of Religion, and founder and director of the Interfaith Youth Corps. Eboo, what are you most excited about right now that's ahead for the IFYC?
So we've had a challenging summer as a country. We've had a summer of a national conversation that has treated Muslims as a marginal group, a group to be afraid of, a group that doesn't have citizenship rights in this country. And I think that we ought to take a hard look at some of the things that have been said in the national press about our fellow citizens who are Muslims and people who make up a fifth of humanity. At the same time, it's been a really, really hopeful summer because the response to the straight-up bigotry against Muslims, I would say, has been a really powerful interfaith response. You know, from Gainesville, Florida, to Oklahoma City, to Syracuse, New York, to Chicago, to San Francisco, people from different faiths, including no faith at all, came together on the weekend of 9/11 and 9/12 to do interfaith service projects. Our staff here at the Interfaith Youth Corps participated in a really important stand against domestic violence that a lot of people from different faiths took part in to show that America is a nation about unity and about inclusiveness, and we stand together against intolerance. And I think our greatest challenge right now as an organization and as a country is to keep that energy of inclusiveness and pluralism and cooperation going and to not say, you know, wow, I'll see you again the next time we have a summer of bigotry, or I'll see you again the next time a bridge collapses. We ought to be coming together to build bridges of cooperation through service all the time. That's what I think it means to make interfaith cooperation a social norm. And that's why I've got so much hope and so much confidence in and so much gratitude towards young people like Aditi and Greg who are leading interfaith projects on a continuous basis. Because, as Greg says, his faith calls him to it, and he can't stop doing it.
We're down to our last 6 or 7 minutes here on Focus today. We have time for another call or two. If you keep your questions or comments short, please. Again, the numbers 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana, 1-800-222-9455 if it's a long-distance call. And that includes, of course, listeners on the Internet at will.illinois.edu. If you've missed part of this program or want to hear other Focus programs or other locally produced ones, do go to that same website, and you can find the archives and listen to them at your convenience via your computer. You can also communicate with us by email, will-talk@illinois.edu. I'm Steve Shoemaker, the guest host for today, and we're talking with Eboo Patel on the phone to Chicago, and in the studio we have a junior at the University of Illinois who's been very active in the Interfaith Youth Corps projects here already, Aditi Singh. I see we do have another caller on line number 4, our toll-free line. Let's go to that call.
Good morning.
Yes.
No, I was just agreeing with what he said, full-heartedly. I'm getting tired of the negativity out there and everybody trying to, add racism and add this and add that. It's just the media. I've said this before and I'll say it again. The media is the sole responsibility of what's going on out there today. I really do believe it. I think they get too much First Amendment rights, and sometimes I wonder why we don't discipline those that take it to an extreme. And I don't know how you feel about that, but I mean, it just seems like if you say anything anymore, you're a bad guy about anybody. You know, I can't. It's turning into like if you say yes to something, you're going to be the bad guy, or no to something, you're going to be the bad guy.
Let's let our guests respond to that. Aditi, you've been helping in communications. What do you think about the use of the media? Are they a problem, or can it be a real help in this kind of an enterprise?
Over the summer, I did have to watch the negative spin that the media took on the whole building Islamic Community Center so close to the old site of the World Trade Center. But I also feel like the media can play a positive role. And it's just the sad fact that sometimes negative stories tend to win over than more audience members than a positive one.
I was impressed by how someone put on YouTube a walk from the World Trade Center site to where the projected mosque and Islamic Center would be. And although it can look small on a map, it takes a long time to walk the streets from one to the other. I thought that was a way that media helped people experience that. We do have another caller on line one. If they're quick, yes, line number one.
Yes, I just wanted to thank you for such an encouraging program. I, like some of the other callers, am very disheartened at all the negative we hear about all different groups. And just very nice to hear that groups are working together.
Thank you very much for the comment. Ibu, how do you stay positive?
Well, I'm surrounded by people like Aditi and Greg. You know, I'm surrounded by young people who are deeply inspired by their faiths to serve others and to cooperate. And I think that there's nothing more inspiring than that, really. It's been what's inspired me throughout history. Young people like Gandhi and King and the Dalai Lama and Dorothy Day, who have been inspired by their traditions to serve others and to make the world a better place. And I feel like I get to work with the faith heroes of this rising generation who are doing the same thing for this era.
Let me quote Tagore, a Indian poet. I slept and dreamed that life was pleasure. I woke and saw that life was service. I served and found that service was pleasure. It seemed to me that might make a good motto for the Interfaith Youth Corps. What do you plan to do next?
It's a beautiful quote. Thank you for that.
Yes. What do you plan to do next, Aditi?
Today?
In terms of service projects.
Well, I do know that after I left the IFYC summer program, that something like A Million Meals for Haiti should be something that should happen every year at U of I. So that's the goal, hopefully. It is the beginning of the year, but who knows, by the end of the year, something big could happen.
And what about you, Dr. Patel?
Well, we're going to keep on identifying the Aditis and the Gregs of the world, and we're going to keep on being mutually inspired. And what Aditi just said, which is, hey, this massive interfaith service project should be something that takes place all the time at the University of Illinois. We got to find somebody with that kind of spirit and vision and work ethic and intelligence on every campus in America and help them connect with each other. So you have, you know, thousands and thousands of Aditis and Gregs who are starting this interfaith cooperation as a social norm movement on their campuses. So I'm off traveling to find and inspire and be inspired by those young people.
We are out of time. Let me thank our guests, Ibu Patel. Dr. Patel has a PhD from Oxford and is the director and founder of the Interfaith Youth Corps. Aditi Singh is a junior here at the University of Illinois and very active in the local chapter of that organization, which is attached and supported by the University YMCA. I might say that the Y is also a supporter of this particular program, and a couple things coming up at the Y this week. Tomorrow at noon, the Know Your University guest will be Mike Ross, director of the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. He'll be talking about what's on stage this season. And Friday at the University Y, there'll be one of the WILL very familiar voices with Robert McChesney from Media Matters talking at the Y at noon for Friday Forum about Farewell to Journalism, the battle to build news media and create American democracy. Two programs at the University YMCA here at the campus of the University of Illinois, 1001 South Wright Street, easily available by bus if you're worried about parking, but often by noon there are parking places even that close to the center of the campus. Again, the Interfaith Youth Corps, if you have more questions, you may go to their website, ifyc.org, and if you care to make a donation, there's a donate button there that they'd be very grateful if you'd use. And of course, you can also pick up Eboo Patel's book, Acts of Faith, The Story of American Muslim and the Struggle for the Soul of a Generation. Thank you for listening to Focus. I'm Steve Shoemaker.